welcome to the Planning Period Podcast, Episode 7. I'm your host, Brad Schreffler. This is a special episode this week, as I just spent the last 5 days or so in San Antonio, Texas for ISTE, the International Society for Technology and Education annual conference. This is like Mecca for ed tech, and I have been lucky enough to attend for 3 years now. My guest for this week's episode is Toby Hurst. He's a friend of mine from the same school. We were both able to attend this conference together, and through interviews with him, I feel like I was able to capture his experience at ISTE as a first-time attendee. I will warn you, there's a fair amount of background noise. We recorded during the conference as we were able, so often that meant while we were having dinner after the conference or in the middle of a busy airport. Still, our audio is good enough that you shouldn't have any problem hearing our conversation. I interviewed Toby at the end of each day. As for organization, I've added a quick musical break between each day's interview so you have an idea of how that's flowing. So, sit back and enjoy my interview with Toby Hurst at ISTE 2017. All right, we're sitting here in San Antonio. We arrived this morning, local time around like 11 o'clock, and we're getting ready for ISTE to start. And I'm traveling this week with a good friend of mine, Toby Hurst, who is the former COT at our school, now attendance dean going into the next year as I take over his role. And we're going to be spending the next 5 days or so here at ISTE. So say hi, I guess, Toby.
Hey, everybody.
Tell us a little bit about you, maybe how you ended up in education and how you ended up at ISTE.
Went to the school where we currently work and wanted to go into psychology. Well, in the middle of college, I started substitute teaching and fell in love with the students and realized that's what I wanted to do with my career. So I spent the last 14 years at the school I graduated, a social studies teacher, into discipline dean for 5 years, then academic dean, and CRT, and now attendance dean. So taking on quite a few roles.
Yeah, you've done a little bit of everything and a staple at our school, I would say. It's interesting, we live in a weird place because in Central Florida in general, I would say there's constant churn, constant change, people come and go all over the place. But for some reason, our school specifically seems to have this veteran status to it, where a lot of our staff are former students at the school. It just seems, I don't think that's normal in a normal school.
No, I think the community itself lends that vibe where people tend to stay there for generations. And with that, I think it comes wanting to go back to the home school, and because it's been a good school for quite a long time. So being able to go back there and still feeling a part of a community, you know, it's a small town vibe. You know, even though the city's grown quite a bit since I went to school there, but it still holds that small town vibe, and I think that's what attracts a lot of people to stay.
Cool. You know, I don't want to do a full normal episode, my three questions and all that stuff, but one I do want to ask you, just because I love this question so much, who is your favorite teacher of all time?
Favorite teacher? A gentleman who just retired this year, Dennis Bodemiller.
You're not the first person on my podcast to mention him, so that works out.
Yeah, he's had a very dry style of teaching, but as weird as it sounds, he kept it very, very interesting at the same time. In the fact that, you know, his English 3 and learning about American literature is something that I've never really necessarily been into, but how he was able to portray the stories and to really get you to understand the author's perspective and where he was coming from and you know, how it related to the story. It made the class interesting, and you know, Mr. Bodemiller would make the stories come alive. And he himself was a great storyteller, although his voice never changed. It was very dry.
Thank you, sir.
He had some stories that would stick in your mind, and just one of those guys. He's going to be missed in education, but after, I believe he's 41 years.
Something like that, yeah.
It's time for him now to move on.
And I tried so hard to get him to come on my show. Chris and I, Newsy and I both worked at him, and as she said on that episode, we were never going to get him to do it, but we were going to try, and he was willing to sit with us. He just wasn't willing to be recorded. And I saw him walk on. I was like, man, you're killing me. I just would love to have you on. And he goes, I'm just a quiet man wanting to walk out and be left alone. And genuinely did not even show up to the faculty luncheon just because he knew they were going to say something about him retiring. So he didn't even go.
He just wanted to walk out in the sunset and be gone. And that just says a lot about his personality. And unfortunately, I've seen over the last, you know, few years. I've just seen the tiredness in him and could tell the way that the state of education was going. Rubbed him a little wrong, and you know, he's, like I said, been through 4 decades of it, and so to be able to, you know, to see him getting tired as he was, I think now is a good time for him to leave, because he's definitely had an impact on a lot of people.
Well, I think that's a fair place to move to my other question then. What is the biggest problem facing education right now?
I don't know if I can say one particular problem. I think there's too much micromanaging in all levels, you know, from the federal government and the state governments down to, you know, the individual schools and school districts. You know, very, very few things do you learn that really, really stick with you in the high school level, especially unless it's something that you're very passionate with. I think if we could turn the focus to learning how to learn, because then when you move on to a college or higher education or an apprenticeship or wherever you go, but teaching the skill of how to learn and the joy of learning new things, I think is where I would love to see education move back to, because people don't know how to critically think. They don't know how to analyze very well. And so I think high school, and especially high school, if we can teach that, then I think that we'll become a more educated society.
But is there anything stopping us from doing that now with the standards as they are? I mean, you can use the standards as the method or the vehicle to get us there.
Well, I think that a lot of teachers feel pressured to move through the standards at a quick pace, to teach to test, because as you and I both know, the last 2.5 months of school, you know, the schedule was nothing but testing. You know, whether it's AP testing or the FSA or whatever the tests were going on. And so that disrupts, you know, however many countless hours of learning and instructional time. And then the teachers feel as though they have to move through the curriculum at such a pace to cover every single standard, which the standards are good, but sometimes the ability to be able to stop and focus on something, you know, that as a teacher maybe you're passionate about, maybe as an American history teacher, you know, the Civil War, and spending a little extra time on that. But in the 11th grade curriculum, you don't cover the Civil War because you start at Reconstruction. You know, so you're basing the education of the Civil War, these students, based upon their 7th grade education. So, you know, just certain things like that. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but maybe there is nothing stopping us. Maybe it's just a paradigm shift and having to switch mindsets.
Yeah, I don't know that. I feel like I see two sides of it. I don't think you're wrong by any stretch of the imagination. Certainly there needs to be a let up. There needs to be some relaxation put on teachers in general, because they're overworked, they're stressed, they're working too many hours. There's all kinds of movements for the balanced teacher work life right now. It's a pretty big movement with picking up some steam, and it's because so many teachers, it's a known stat that we spend how many hours outside of our job working, which in other fields wouldn't be acceptable, and we spend our own money on our profession, which would never happen anywhere else. So I agree with you that there needs to be some slack get in. I've just recently started to come into this impression that, all excuses aside, we need to do the best with what we can. And I feel like in a lot of ways, you could teach to the standards and then use the standards as the vehicle to get to the life learning skills you wanted. And I'm not saying that's easy, and it definitely takes a lot of work, but I think it can be done. You talk about testing, and that's a great example to me, is we do testing for the last 2.5 months of the school year, more or less, and no instruction happens during that time, it seems like. I mean, there are exceptions, of course, but at least in the majority of rooms, my kids were telling me for all of May, oh, we're not doing anything in that class, we're not doing anything in that class, we're not doing anything in that class. And it's not that my kids don't want to do anything. That's what frustrates me so much, is they'll come to my room instead of staying in the room doing nothing so that they can at least help. They'll just fix a computer or help with collection or do things I need them to do, because they want to do something. They don't want to just sit around and do nothing. And these teachers are squandering the time they have because they just feel like testing is an overburden on the kids. And I wonder if that's a representative example of us not using our time efficiently and then complaining about a lack of time, And certainly not universally, but I just wonder if there's a way to maybe readdress some of those priorities in an individual classroom.
No, I 100% agree. There's a lot of wasted instructional time in many cases. And like you said, there's many teachers who definitely don't do that, and they take advantage of every minute of instructional time that there are. But I also want to revert back to, at that time of the year, are the teachers just so burnt out and worn out that they're tired? You know, and I look at it as, look at the education of schools today and the amount of stress and anxiety, not only with teachers, but with the students. I read a quote, and I don't know if it's a fact, and you can't quote it, but the anxiety level of students today is equal to the same anxiety level of mental patients in the 50s. And look at the amount of, we won't go down this route, but look at the amount of prescription drugs that our students are taking for anxiety and depression. Because, and I'm not saying that, you know, school is the main source of that, but definitely added on to that, and we see that every day with our students.
For sure. I don't mean to claim that it's the teacher's fault by any stretch. That I think we're placed in a system that puts intense limitations on us, and in a lot of ways stifles that creativity that I'm advocating for. So I'm not at all saying that it's 100% the teacher's fault. I just think maybe if I felt like in my classroom when I took ownership and I said, forget the rules, my kids gained as a result. And I just think maybe if more people did that, we don't actually need to make massive changes to the standards on the whole. We just need to change the way we think about the standards as a classroom. Because, like you said, if we teach them those lifelong learning skills, if we teach them the ability to find information on their own throughout the school year, then maybe we only need to spend a month before the test going over the test and not even talk about the test until that time.
Right. But when I first started teaching, there was a very relaxed view of teaching to the standards. And now there's been more focus on the standards, which I think is good. And I think maybe what may happen is now, over the last few years, as standards-based instruction has gotten a very big push and a priority, that maybe the teachers will begin to soon be comfortable with that, to the point where they can begin to go back and like you said, focus on certain things and take ownership. But maybe because it is going a different direction right now, that now once they get comfortable with, okay, I've taught this for 3 years now and these are the same standards, now I feel comfortable with them, now they can take ownership back and start adjusting. I don't know.
So almost as if what we're experiencing in the last few years is growing pains, adjusting to a new system that is maybe not flawed, but we're actually giving it enough of a chance to settle.
Yeah, and standards are great. A lot of teachers, when you say standards, kind of have a negative viewpoint, but it's important that all students are receiving an equal and fair education. And so to have those standards and be able to, you're covering everything that you need to cover for them to learn is wonderful. But maybe, you know, like you said, that was a good way of putting it, the growing pains of it. And hopefully the legislation doesn't change things to where just as teachers are getting comfortable with it, now all of a sudden things switch.
It's historically how it goes, though.
And therein lies the frustration and the insanity and the madness of everything.
Switching gears a little bit, lightheartedly. So we've been in San Antonio for a few hours now. What are your impressions of San Antonio so far?
Looks a little dirty.
It is a little dirty. We both said that, yeah.
Old, but not necessarily historical old. Just doesn't seem as though...
Like unkempt almost.
Yeah, and I'm just coming back from New Orleans for my first time, where everything is quite old there, but things are still alive and there's still some pride. And in my first impression, walking down here to the Riverwalk, didn't seem to be a lot of pride in the city.
I will say, I feel like once we get to the actual Riverwalk, it like completely changed.
100%.
Which was interesting. So we walked through the city from our hotel towards the Riverwalk area, and it was like, meh, it was kind of boring, lame. I guess it's not fair, but I mean, felt kind of not too much going on. And then, as you can probably tell in this recording, I'm assuming I'm not going to get all this background noise out. When you get to the Riverwalk, everything's very much alive. There's boat tours going on, and people walking by, and cool little quaint places to eat and have a little snack. And so this part I think is kind of cool. I'm enjoying this part.
It's definitely a touristy area, but not a corny touristy area. You know, there's a little bit, there's some culture here, and I don't know how long this Riverwalk's been in the existence that it is today, but whoever had this in mind, I think definitely saved the city.
Yeah, they definitely made it, gave it something to come for. Definitely something to look at. You know, I think it's important to talk about it because I feel like a lot of the benefit of these kinds of conferences is not necessarily directly applied back to the classroom per se. I feel like, to me, coming to ISTE, and this is my third year in a row at ISTE, every year I've come to our school and we've brought other people with me each year, and it's been different people each year, but I feel like the relationships I built as a result of doing this kind of traveling and experiencing a conference that binds us all together, but also going to get to experience a city and you know, have some good food together and stuff like that, I feel like that has a lot of value in education as well.
I completely agree. Community, connections, and networking, I think are probably some of our more valuable tools that sometimes don't get utilized as much as they should. So you spoke when we talked about a week ago when we were figuring out our schedule and what workshops we wanted to go to, that you wanted to hit some of the community events for more connections with the podcast to, you know, be able to learn. And one thing that, not to toot your horn, but one thing I've noticed about you is that you've got a passion for what you do and you're constantly learning. You've got that growth mindset. And so that's...
You just made me vomit in my mouth a little bit, throwing growth mindset out as like a real phrase. But I appreciate the compliment.
Well, but it's very applicable. You're always looking at how you can better yourself and how you can do... how you can have more of an impact in your job. And I don't think it's only for your job, but I think it's for you personally, you know, to be able to grow. And I asked you earlier in the airport, where do you see yourself in the future as far as an education? And you don't know, but that's fine.
I don't know, but I know that no matter what I choose to do, the networking will help me. So that's where I focus, it
Absolutely.
Seems like.
And we all know that sometimes it's not what you know, it's who you know. So that aspect helps as well.
Yeah. And that's why I love a conference like this. You know, we commented on the way here as we were walking through the city. And we had, you know, our hotel, we booked a little too late. We're on a school budget, so it's limited options for housing. So our hotel is pretty far away from, you know, a good solid 15-minute walk. But even still, we both made the comment that, like, you can really pick out the teachers walking through the city right now. This conference, does it give you an idea of how the scope of this conference is, like, how big this conference is?
Well, I didn't start thinking about it until we were in the airport, and I started saying, that person looks like a teacher. Then when I was on the plane and everybody's standing up to leave, I'm like, there's a group of four people, right? They're probably coming to the conference. And I think half of our plane was filled with people probably coming to this conference. And
well, we know we definitely saw a bunch of district people that we know. No, we're on the plane with us as well, but you're right. I mean, you can see it looking around, like just where we're sitting right now. The group of people sitting directly behind you are definitely here for ISTE because I've heard them talking about what's going already. And you can see the groups of teachers walking. Like something about teachers are just recognizable. It feels
like. But that's the question that we asked earlier: is why is that?
Why is that? Why and do we look like teachers? Because I hope not. I don't know that I want to look like a teacher. I don't know that I don't feel like that's complimentary of myself.
Maybe that's why I'm wearing a Bob Marley shirt.
No, it's a good choice. What are you looking forward to at the conference this week?
Honestly, I don't have a lot of expectations. I'm not exactly sure what I'm getting into. My main role this week is to kind of be your wingman, per se. You know, there's little workshops or conferences that you want to attend, but you can't because you're going to go to another one. You know, I say send me over there and learn the information to help bring back, you know, this year, you going into your new role in staff development and professional development. Yeah, you know, I figured that I could come in having that role a little bit last year and be a help for you in that.
So we did spend a little bit of time, you and I, looking through some of the conference offerings. Are there any that are sticking out of your head off of memory that you're really excited to go see?
Well, it's very interesting, the one about Trump, but I'm not going to go see that one, how they're going to incorporate technology and education.
Honestly, I'm not going to miss that. Like, I really am very curious how they're going to go there. Trump and education, that seems like something you should see.
Yeah, it could be a very popular one or one where there's nobody at. But going and looking at it, where our school is going into year three or four?
Going into year three.
Three with digital curriculum. I feel as though like you said before, tools. I think we have a lot of tools at our disposal. And I think now it's about honing in those tools to, just honing into to more standards-based and how do we use those tools to the maximum efficiency. You know, it's easy to use something like Quizlet, you know, in the classroom, and it's fun and the kids really get involved with it, but are the teachers using it to its maximum efficiency? You know, so some of these things that I look forward into is how we can take those teachers and go to the next level and help them with their teaching.
I like that, and like you said, I've mentioned that before, where that's really our goal for our school is to get beyond the tool, and which is why I'm moving into a more curriculum resource role as opposed to digital, because digital should just be assumed at this point. So,
yeah, and like going into year three, even though we've switched platforms, you know, it seems like every year for the teachers, I know that's been disheartening to them. But most of them are understanding the basics of the technology, and even those that were what we would call antiques in the education world have adopted these tools and began to use them in the classroom. And so it's fun to see the evolution of the teaching style in the classes. Nowhere near where we should be. There are some teachers that are rock stars, others that are trying their best but need a lot of help, and unfortunately there's a handful that still really don't, you know, use it and utilize it too much. However, I just hope that we can come out of here and bring back stuff to the school that will help.
Well, Toby, I think this gives us a pretty good starting point to go off of. We'll check in with you a couple more times throughout the week and cut all this stuff together and edit it out and send it out.
I'm sure I've given you quite a bit to edit.
That's okay. Thanks, man. So we are at the end of the Sunday, which is the, I guess, unofficial start of ISTE, because technically the conference floor and everything else opens up tomorrow. But we do end the night tonight with the keynote. Toby and I made it to a couple different events today. Couple of good ones. We made it to the Ignite sessions round one, and we made it to the keynote. So tell me a little bit, Toby, what are your impressions so far of ISTE?
Huge conference, over 21,000 people here. It's quite massive. Once again, we can definitely spot the educators as we walk around the city.
To be fair, with 21,000 of them in the city, that's pretty much everybody in the city at this point.
Yeah, true. The Ignite sessions, they were decent. More seemed as though like a pep rally, motivational kind of speeches with not a lot of content and things to take away. I think the young kids that presented stole the show for the most part.
I agree. We saw four. I also don't understand. So for anyone that doesn't know, Ignite are 5 minutes apiece. They're 20 slides with 15 seconds each. Somehow, that managed to go almost an hour longer than it was supposed to. It was supposed to end at 2:45. We left after 3:15, I think.
Yeah.
And from what I saw from some comments on Twitter, it looked like it went on for a while longer, and there were still a few more presenters left to go. I don't really know how that happened.
Yeah, some scheduling issues there. I will say, though, a couple of those young kids in about 10 to 15 years, they're going to be self-made millionaires.
Oh, yeah. That, you know, even the first, the kid that started out, that Karan D, he was just so on top of his game, just running a presentation. And there were probably, 1,000, 1,500 people in that audience.
Yeah.
And this kid's 10, 11, and just presented with ease in front of them.
Yeah. Then another young man, I forgot his name, but got into coding and STEAM as a second grader when they wouldn't allow him into the school, and he created his own STEAM project.
STEAM club, yeah. He goes by STEAM Nerds on Twitter. I don't know. I didn't get his real name.
He's got a YouTube channel as well, STEAM Nerds.
Yeah. Not only did he build his own club, or he forced his way into the club, then he was the next year, they still wouldn't let anyone else his age in, and he said, well, then forget this. I'm just going to build my own camp at my house.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so the Ignite sessions, they were, you know, okay. Not a whole lot of takeaway from them.
Yeah, I agree. We both said at the end of those that there needed to be more substance. And in the past, and I tweeted about this at the time, but in the past, there have been more substance in the Ignite sessions. There have been some that are peppy, but there's usually some with some takeaways and some concrete, go do this. And I felt like that was lacking big time, at least in round one.
Another just overall general perception of today is the connectivity of the people at the conference and the community and the ISTE is Everybody seems to be on Twitter and doing, you know, tech talks or tech ed talks, and something that I've never gotten into. And I've just kind of been pondering when I would fit that into my schedule and what route I want to go and how that would benefit me in my profession. So ultimately I could, you know, benefit the school and the students. But definitely something that a majority of the people there seem to be connected through Twitter and other social media.
Yeah, Twitter does seem to be the place where teachers are at for whatever reason.
All right, and then we finished up Ignite. We went and grabbed some lunch or some dinner, early dinner, and then we hit up the keynote with Jad Abdumar.
You did a better job saying it than I could have.
Yeah. Who, for anybody that doesn't know, is the host and creator of Radiolab, the public radio podcast that is extremely popular, been around for a long time, an early on podcast. And just my impression of that was just wow. I mean, in one word, just wow.
At the end of it, I was confused about what the purpose was, but then I quickly realized the quote-unquote direction he went in, how there wasn't necessarily a singular point or theme to what he was saying, but there's points along the journey, along the way, that would just stick out to you and motivate you. And then then at the end, I was like, oh, so it's kind of, and then Brad, I believe, wrote this down as well. It's kind of what you got out of it. It wasn't a specific thing he wanted everybody to take away. It's what you pulled from it.
And there were a lot of things you could have pulled from it, for sure. The technology component of what he did, first of all, that part was cool. The integration of just video, audio, pictures, and just back and forth between him speaking and to this, and then having audio running under while he's speaking, and all that done live is highly impressive.
Yeah. There was only one little technical glitch, and he pressed the play button for the split second too soon, but everything just ran seamlessly and made it just pleasant to the eyes and to the ears.
Yeah, it was nice. It was really cool, but I also commented on my blog post, and you'll tell me if you agree. Somehow he manages to speak to an audience of 10,000 people as if it's just you and him in a room chatting, or you and him over a beer.
And that's exactly what I said afterwards. I would love to have a beer with that guy, because he's talking not like any other typical keynote speaker that you've seen. He's just speaking and speaking wisdom. And I just feel as though anybody that's had the opportunity to be able to call him a friend or a co-worker is definitely benefited from him.
You say things not a typical keynote speaker. Normally with a keynote speaker, you expect them to be up and moving and engaging and yelling, and maybe not yelling, but at least giving that passion and using the stage. And yet he sat in a chair the entire time. He didn't get up. He didn't cause a bluster or a scene. And yet I felt moved by what he was saying, for sure.
Absolutely. It was, he wasn't a cheerleader, but he grabbed your attention.
Yeah.
And there's something in his voice and the sounds that he used. And I'm curious to go look at his radio show, his podcast now, because if it's anything like that, I think I'm going to be hooked.
Yeah, I have a feeling that I will definitely be hooked as well. Definitely Radiolab is on my to-listen list. But like you said, there's only so many hours in the day. When am I supposed to listen to all this stuff?
Yeah. One of the things that I took away, which I don't think was supposed to be one of his key points, was he was talking about who sees a rainbow better. A person, a dog. There's another animal, and then there was the mantis shrimp.
Yeah, they ended up finding out the mantis shrimp.
Which, if you don't know anything about the mantis shrimp, Google it. I think you'll be pretty amazed by what he said.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
And at the end of it, he said that the mantis shrimp sees it better because they have 16 cones in their eyes, and went on about it. But I got stuck on the question of who sees the rainbow better. And I think that depends. I think everybody has their own perspective. And I think in education, when we boil that down, that's how we can begin to personalize education, is trying to see how others see the rainbow, how their perception of the rainbow has been formed and changed and skewed, and where they are the the previous learning experiences that they've had. So to say that one person sees a rainbow better than the other, that is very subjective. And I think that if we can all figure out how each other sees the rainbow, then we can begin to understand how to teach the students.
Well said. I just think there's so many points you could draw from that keynote. I think that was an awesome way to kick off ISTE. They had some really awesome keynotes last year, and I loved them, but that definitely takes the cake in terms of presentations and just awesome. And then you and I went upstairs, and they did a Q&A session with Jad at the end, and there were not very many people in there. I was surprised how few people went upstairs for the Q&A.
Maybe 75?
Something like that. It felt very intimate, very close. They took some questions from Twitter, and they took some questions from the audience, but it was a very private session. It was super cool. We got to go up and do a picture with him afterwards and shake his hand, and it's just a really cool way to close out the day. I feel excited for the next couple of days of learning we're going
to
do.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Just hoping I don't get overwhelmed with all the possibilities of where to go and the different workshops and presentations, and just focus on the ones that I choose or Brad chooses for me to go, and just take what I can out of there. Can't take everything away, but take some things away and see how we can implement them.
I think we'll call that a wrap for today. We'll wrap up here and move on to getting ready for tomorrow.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So Toby, we're at the end of Monday of the conference, and what are your thoughts now that we've sat through our Monday sessions?
I think a big thing that I'm taking away from the conference in general is the importance of connectivity and sitting through and getting to meet others and seeing how connected they are to other people globally in the education world, and how they increase their professional learning through Twitter, podcasts, blogs, and other various means. I see the importance of that, and I'm looking forward to increasing that in my life to be able to learn, because we can sit through a conference and sit through certain workshops, but I think it's the continuous connectivity of other like-minded individuals that would produce the most growth.
Yeah, we had a very very personal connection to that tonight, as we made some strong, I would say strong connections to a few people that we met at the EdTech Coaches PLN meeting. So you became friends with some new people, which is
absolutely
always a good thing.
And other people doing the same things that we are, and making the connection with them. And then after the meeting, there was a networking event that we did just that.
Yeah, I think it was awesome. All right, besides connecting, what are you learning in your sessions? You got anything, big takeaways today?
Big theme in some of the sessions and things was just more of that personalizing education, but more importantly, knowing your learners. And that just doesn't happen through data. That doesn't happen through baseline data or test scores. But it's a continuous process that happens throughout the year. And it's not just knowing your learners on an academic level either. It's finding out what drives them, what's their question. And they may not know that, but as an educator, it's important for us to try to pull that out from them. And I think if we can connect with our students on that level, I think we'll see tremendous gains and tremendous results, not only in the academic world, but in their personal life as well. Another thing that kind of connects to that I found really cool, that's very popular now, is getting students' work out there globally, getting it out there published. Because if students are just doing homework and turning in worksheets or turning in work to the teacher, then they feel that the work is just for the teacher. But if we can get them to do projects and videos, blogs, you name it, and put it out there, social media, or put it out there on other platforms, they're going to find purpose in that, and they're going to see the true meaning of it, and they're going to want to put their best work out there.
I like that idea a lot of getting them to publish, getting something truly out there. And that, to me, is such a great concept, because it hits on a lot of different places. They're
they're not only giving actual meaning to themselves, they give actual meaning. You know, that could be something that I've often advocated when we talk about digital citizenship. Students are effectively building a resume for themselves by posting publicly. Instead of saying it's too dangerous for them to post bad stuff, let's have them post good stuff so that a college application, now when they look up someone online, they find this website that they've been maintaining, discussing their learning gains and everything else over the course, and these amazing projects they've done and everything else over the course of their high school career or middle school career would just be so authentic and real and relevant, I feel like.
And seeing other classrooms and other students doing the same type projects, this is in one session, and a lady talking about her Twitter account, she's connected to like 6 different classrooms worldwide. And so the students in her classroom will get to see what they're doing in other schools. Sometimes they collaborate on things as well. And I think the kids find that a little bit more exciting than within the walls of the classroom and in the confines of their desk.
You were talking to me a little bit about a session you sat in with something November.
Yes, his name was Alan November. Published author, and just listening to him, it was a brilliant man. I wish there would have been more presentations and sessions with him. His whole purpose of the session was a new job description for teachers, is what it was titled. And he focused on questions that we need to be asking future teachers or potential teachers when hiring them. And I found it amazing because in the last year or so, I've sat in on a few interview panels, and I've also been interviewed myself, and the scope of the questions were very limited and nearsighted to what would happen in the school or in the classroom. And his questions went beyond that. Some of the questions were going back to what we're talking about, just about professional learning, is one of the questions was, how do you manage your growth, your professional growth? And he says, if you get the answer back from somebody that says, oh, I go to professional developments, then you need to move on to the next candidate. Through that professional growth, like we talked about earlier, Twitter and iTunes U and Code Academy and all these different organizations you can be a part of and connectivities with social media, somebody that answers like that, that has that in their life, is somebody that you know is going to continuously grow as an educator, because I've been in education for going on 14 years now, and the realm that it's, or not the realm, but just how much it's changed in that short amount of time. You definitely have to be adaptable as a teacher.
Cool, and I like that idea of going back to the connected educator, but also that lifelong learner factor. That's critical, especially as I train staff and do coaching and stuff like that. The ones that are lifelong learners that want to learn something new all the time, just those are, they're so easy to coach because they want to try something new. It's the ones that are stuck and not wanting to change that make that so difficult sometimes.
Yeah, and just in the technology implementation in the last couple of years at our school, you definitely see that. And there's a lot of reluctant teachers. And those teachers now, I believe a lot of them have realized that this is what teaching is, and probably have some sort of regret that they didn't jump on board early, dive in with both feet, because now they're behind in the game and trying to catch up, which is good that they're trying to catch up. But at the same sense, as quickly as you may get caught up, then, you know, it's changed again.
Any other major takeaways today? Anything you're thinking about?
One cool thing that Dr. Allen had talked about, or Dr. November, was about the kids managing their own learning. And he gave an example of a young lady in a classroom that the teacher allowed them to do homework or present their knowledge and mastery in any way that they wanted to do. And so what she would do is she would create a tutorial, and this was a mathematics class. She would create a tutorial on how to do whatever math that they were working on at the time, and then she would publish it, and she would put it out there.
This is the student or the teacher?
The student.
Oh, okay.
And one of her tutorials had 92,000 views. Wow. And when asked how long it took her to do the tutorial, she said about 3 hours. And when the teacher said, well, how long would it, or when the interviewer asked her, how long would it have taken you to do the homework? She said about 7 minutes. And the person asking her was like, well, why? Why are you doing it? And like what I said earlier about homework is for the teacher, but this is for other people. And now I feel as though other people are depending upon me. And she goes, I find diving in deeper and creating the tutorial helps me understand the information better. I thought that was a pretty cool takeaway. But all in all, after day two or day one of full conference, there's a lot of stuff out there. I walked through the expo hall, which was ginormous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous how big it is.
And there's so many cool things out there. I didn't stop at most booths because I don't have the power to make any educational and financial decisions to purchase these programs or devices or software or whatever it is. But there's just so much out there. There's not an excuse. There's not an excuse for a teacher to be standing up and doing sit and get with the students anymore. And while we may not have access to all of those tools, there's so many tools that are free, or there's so many tools that we do have access to. And it was just very interesting to see the amount of educational stuff out there for purchase. It was it's definitely a huge industry.
It is ridiculous. You sat in a little bit, you had to leave it before it was over, but you sat in a little bit of that 60 and 60 session, the game show, the EdTech game show, and they literally had 18 different tools that they compared against each other, like a March Madness bracket style. But of the 18, there were a handful that I had never even heard of yet, and I didn't know about and had to look into and learned about. And there's just so much out there. And this is what I do day in and day out for a normal, you know, for an everyday teacher who's not just researching ed tech companies and on Twitter every 5 seconds. There's no way they could know every tool that might work in their classroom.
No, it seems it probably is daily or weekly that there's new tools out there, and the tools that we have been using are being updated. I sat in on a thing today where they said now Google Docs has an extension for quizzes on it now, so you can do quizzes and stuff through Google Docs. And there's just so many things, so many different tools. I sat in on a snapshot today, and that's all they talked about is just various tools, and half of those were just extensions to Google Docs. And it was baffling how much is out there.
Yeah. Well, it's been a ridiculously long day. I am exhausted. I don't know about you. I think, what do we say, like 1,800 steps, something like that we got today?
No, 18,000.
Yeah, that's right. 18,000. Yeah. 18,000. Whatever. I don't math good.
I feel like just walking in circles around that convention center.
Yeah, it's crazy. Maybe next year we need to consider where our rooms are before we pick sessions to go to one after the other. I've been in back-to-backs all day, so... if you want to read about any of the sessions I was at, I wrote about all mine on my blog, of course, bradtreffler.com, and there's a whole tag just for ISTE17, so all of the stuff I wrote about is on there, so if you want to read those, you can. But thanks, Toby, for taking a minute to sit with me, and we'll wrap up probably after day three, and then we fly home on Wednesday morning. We're going to miss the final keynote, but we have one more keynote tomorrow, and we both have a handful of sessions, some posters, the EdTech Coach Playground I'm excited about. So a couple big things to talk about tomorrow.
All right, Toby. Well, we are at the airport, ready to fly home, ready to call this conference over. I guess for us, the conference is over. Now it's just the travel to do. And what are your final takeaways? We got day three to talk about. We got Wednesday. We have Tuesday and Wednesday to talk about a little bit, I guess, here. So how was Tuesday for you? Let's start there.
Tuesday started out good with keynote speaker. Pardon me, I forgot her name. But what I took
Jenny
away from...
Jenny Magira, something like that.
Yeah. Just took away from that is inspiring the story within, which has kind of been a theme a little bit through the weekend or through the week. Just finding the story, you know, within the students and getting it out there and letting the students get it out there. Yeah, like I said, just reiterated some of the things from, you know, earlier in the week.
Yeah, and I liked that idea of the story that's not being told. Find that final refrain where she talked about telling the story that's not being told. I thought that was a cool way to look at it, and the power of getting the story, not just to the teachers, but globally. I mean, a lot of those ideas, like you said, have connected across the presentations. Yeah. So, any other great sessions for you on Tuesday?
No, I went to a couple sessions and was talking about some basic tools that they use for classroom management or data management. But nothing outstanding.
For people that haven't been to ISTE before, can you and I talked a little bit, and you talked about maybe kind of your plan for next year, where you were a little disappointed with the sessions yesterday, and maybe how you're going to correct that if you go back again?
Yeah, now that I understand kind of what each category of sessions are, going into next year, being able to look at the sessions ahead of time, being able to really read through the descriptions, and if they're hosted by a certain company, really have to look into it to see if it's just going to be a sales pitch or not. But be able to better organize, and I think going into next year, I have a better understanding going into it of where I want my focus to be, but where I might get the more bang for my buck. Like this year, I found the sessions that were like hour-long sessions, like real sessions, were the ones where I got the most benefit from, as opposed to the snapshots or the posters. There's a couple decent information at the poster sessions, being able to talk with people, but I found those hour-long sessions were the ones that really, where I got the most out of.
You know, and I've written about this on my blog before, where I feel like a lot of times the titles of sessions are very link-baity. They're designed to get people to go to them, and they don't necessarily always portray exactly what they say they're going to.
Yeah, exactly. They tell you, how to change professional development, and then you go in there and they're trying to sell you on the 6 books that they've written on professional development.
Yeah, so I agree completely. My first year takeaway was very much the same. You need to read the full conference, the full session description, not just the title, not just the blurb, but get into the summary and those kinds of things and look at who's presenting and are they being sponsored by a company that they're presenting for. And a lot of those kinds of things will help a lot if you're coming to ISTE for the first time and want to get the best out of it. Reading the full session descriptions is probably the most important tip I would give.
Yeah, and I think with your help, I was able to connect with a few key people on Twitter and be able to follow them and kind of see maybe things that they might be excited about or what others are looking forward to, and kind of use that as well.
Well, as we get ready to get on our plane and head home, which we're both excited to do, I think.
But absolutely.
I will miss the conference atmosphere. But tell me, what are your major takeaways from the last 5 days?
Education is constantly evolving, especially with technology. The things that these apps and programs and devices are able to do are way ahead of the game, I feel like, than most classrooms. And I feel as though the speed at which they're changing is also quicker than the speed at which things are changing in the classroom. And we need to find a way to be able to stay up to date and continuously evolve as educators. Because if not, we'll just be left behind. The thing when computers first came out, you buy one and 6 months later it's obsolete. The evolution of the hardware and the computers, and I feel the same way with education. And the students are constantly changing. They're the generation that's grown up in the digital age. They don't know a life without computers or tablets or phones. And for us to still be in the archaic ways of teaching, having them sit in desks and rows and not using the electronics available to them and the technology, that's absurd at this point.
Okay, I can agree with that completely. Tell me, what is the biggest thing you think will change in your practice, improve in your practice, or maybe that you hope you can convince other teachers to do as a result of being here?
A couple of things. Number one, like I said, a couple of the daily recaps, just starting to connect globally, starting to connect with other educators and increase my professional learning outside of just the professional developments that the school or the district provide. I think that's where I'll catch a lot of growth. I got a couple of ideas for my current role as a tennis dean of things that I could do to possibly help in my job responsibilities. And then another theme that you and I have talked about this week that we want to bring back to our schools is just to bring fun back into it and a culture of community and family amongst the staff. And I think that'll also trickle down with the students as well. So you just got some ideas of how can make learning, not only learning in the classroom, but just building relationships with the students and the staff, about making it fun and making it a place where people want to be. in that place that they're ready to go home as soon as the last bell rings.
Agreed. You know, we talked about, when looking, thinking back on Jenny's keynote, one of the things that stuck out to me the most is she talked about Tolkien, and in The Hobbit, Gandalf shows up and he says, "Hey, I'm preparing for an adventure and I'd like you to go with me to Bilbo." And she said, "Wow, that's so cool. We can prepare for an adventure and then other people, we can just plan an adventure and other people can go with us." So the problem becomes, in ISTE standard, you go home and no one wants to go on the adventure with you.
Right.
It's a real, she referenced back to last year's keynote with the sad selfies going home, but you get back to the school and all of those people aren't passionate and pumped and excited like you are as a result of ISTE. And that's always been a struggle for me for this, I'm assuming now for the third year will be a struggle for me.
Yeah, and another point that came across this week, I think it may have either been you or one of the speakers, is what you do in your classroom affects the school. You got one teacher that the kids are excited about, they're pumped, they like the class, they're involved with the technology, they're doing innovative things, and then the bell rings and they got to go to another classroom, and I believe you said you got somebody has got an A and is totally engaged in this class and they're brilliant students, but they're just getting by with a C in this other class because they don't like the environment of the classroom. So it's definitely, it definitely affects the students when only a few teachers or a handful of teachers are on board. And so it's like, how do you get the whole staff on board? And you and I spoke off the record the first night, and we discussed a lot of the issues in education in our school, our district, and society and culture in general. And we thought we had some answers, but we can't control a lot of that. But the one thing that I've been refocused on this week is we can control ourselves and we can control the changes that we can make and hopefully have an effect on others. But it has to start with ourselves. And we just do the best that we can do to fix whatever needs to be fixed within our realm and our professional realm, and then hopefully have that effect on others.
Yeah, agreed. And it's no more different than we would expect of a classroom teacher going into their room and modeling the strategies they want their students to do. We, as instructional support, coaches and deans and everything else, and administration, we need to model the strategies we want our teachers to do. And then our teachers will model it for our students. But I think you're right. We need to focus not so much on the what is the wrong and what can't we control and what can't we fix, but what can we do to fix the problems, even if it just fixes it for the 125 kids in our room or the 25 kids or whatever.
Absolutely.
So... yeah. Well, Toby, as we get ready to close this out, are there any final thoughts you have for us? We could close this thing out and we'll be done with ISTE for this year.
Not much else that I have, you know, that I haven't already said, but I'm hoping that next year I'll have the opportunity to somehow find a way to get to ISTE in Chicago and continue on this journey.
Well, people can find you at Toby Hurst, TobyHurst, and of course that'll be in the show notes. They can find you on Twitter at Toby Hurst. And if you guys have any questions or comments for Toby, you can reach out to him there. And thanks again, Toby, for joining me in San Antonio and going on this trip with me and checking in with us every day as we've gotten through this conference.
Absolutely. It's been a blast. Been a great learning opportunity. And thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
What a whirlwind of a week. As I record this outro, I have been back home for less than 24 hours. It was, as it has been in the past, an outstanding conference. I learned tons. Huge shout out to Carrie Abbott for her session on Flipped PD. It totally got my mind running, and I am so pumped for next year now. I made some new friends. Looking at you guys, Kelsey, Chris, Rhiannon, and Ashley, my new EdTech coaches crew, and made great connections with other thought leaders in the industry, many of whom I'm hoping will be guests in future episodes of the podcast. Thank you as always to Kevin McLeod for our music, Vicious. Check him out at incompetech.com. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the Planning Period podcast, hit me up on Twitter. DMs are open, so slide on in. Also, of course, remember, if you want to support the show, please give a rating on iTunes or share it out with a friend of yours. Let them know that they may enjoy the Planning Period podcast. Remember, we're on an every other week schedule through the rest of July and beginning of August. So my next episode will release on July 14th. In the meantime, enjoy your summer.